All right, welcome to the Tales Over Tales podcast. It's Jordan
and Alicia
and Abigail.
We're all here. Well, not here physically, but at least we get to have you in spirit, and it's really good to see your face.
Yes, my spirit is there.
You feel it. Aw, how are you doing?
Good, good. A lot of exciting things in the works, definitely.
Yeah, do we want to get started on the highs and lows? Do you want to kick us off?
Okay, yeah. Do we want to talk about like our special announcement first, and then we can...
I think Alicia's got a special announcement.
Oh, baby, do I ever. All right, so before we get into like our highs and lows, guys, so I just want to make a podcast. I want to make an announcement for the podcast. And it's also going to be a podcast first also. So a little backstory here. As we know, Iron Flame just came out a couple weeks ago. Book was phenomenal, by the way. I powered through the heck out of it.
Help us get Abigail to jump on this train.
Yes. Please,
because she has not read Fourth Wing or Iron Flame.
Abby.
I know.
So along with the book, Special Edition had came out as well. And Amazon had flagged everyone that had pre-ordered and said, you know, that the special edition was sold out.
It was a nightmare.
It was, yeah. And they didn't really specify either if we were still getting our special edition copy or if we were just getting the original. So me being me, I was like, I need my special edition in my hands. So I went to a Barnes & Noble and they got me a copy. Well, lo and behold, that same day, Amazon came, dropped off my book. And it was a special edition. So with that being said, the announcement, we're doing a giveaway. So with that being said, so we are going to do our first ever giveaway. It's Iron Flame special edition. Beautiful black sprayed edges. I made sure the map wasn't upside down. Page numbers weren't missing. Dragons weren't missing. Everything is in great condition. It's actually still in the Amazon box. So we will be posting this. It will technically be yesterday when we post this because we're posting this episode tomorrow in our time. But it will give the breakdown of how to enter, when to enter by, and then we will be announcing the lucky winner when we do a small little episode on December 12th. So make sure you guys enter by December 10th. Again, all of the rules and everything will be on the Instagram, but we are super, super excited that we were able to do this and super, super excited that I went and spent more money than I needed to so you guys can get a book. So there
you go. Worked out.
Making all of your Christmas wishes come true. Exactly. There is one lucky winner out there. So be on the lookout on the Tales Over Tales podcast Instagram account. We will put the details on how to enter for that later. But we are so excited. And yeah, so let's get into it from there. Abby, how was your Thanksgiving?
My Thanksgiving was good. I got to spend the first part of it with my boyfriend Matt's family. His mom served Thanksgiving in. She's a good cook. And so I enjoyed her food, but it didn't work out for me to go to my family's Thanksgiving because they had it earlier than usual, which is like they're always like super late. But for some reason this year you're like, oh, we're gonna start on time. So I couldn't make it there, which was fine. I went there the next day. I dropped off the sweet potato pies that I had made. So I just like dropped it off to family members, got to talk to my sister and hang out with her. We ended up having like an impromptu like sister day. So that was nice. Yeah. So Thanksgiving was really good. And then, you know, I also am starting a new job, which I'm super excited about. Yeah, it's going to open up a lot of opportunities. And I'm like, I was just telling the ladies, I was like, I'm about to enter into my corporate baddie era and I'm ready for it. So I'm going to be starting that soon. And that's definitely something to look forward to. Like lows, I would say like, because I do individual therapy. So I miss it. I'm like, I had some really rough conversations with clients about me leaving and, you know, how are they feeling and things like that, folks that weren't able to continue with me at my new location. And so that made me pretty sad, but it brought about very good conversation.
Amen. Amen.
I love that.
Well, we are super excited for you. And when I get to visit you in a couple months, I look forward to celebrating with you. Yes. So it's going to be awesome. And Alicia will be there to celebrate with us in spirit.
Yes.
For sure.
Yes.
You'll have to make your way out here for us to celebrate.
Yes.
With you in person.
That's
Did true. You want to share your highs and lows?
Sure. First? Okay. So guys, so I know I was like MIA last month. So as we all know, I got married.
She got married.
I got married.
Milweed.
Milweed over here.
Milweed.
And it was, oh my gosh, it was absolutely beautiful. I'm so glad that Jordan was there to just witness the literal magic, because I had a vision in my head of what I wanted everything to look like, and it was executed absolutely perfectly. The ceremony went great. The dinner was so good.
It was very good. Yeah, it was yummy food. Oh my gosh, it's to die for.
So
Abigail, Brussels sprouts with bacon
and syrup.
Oh my gosh. Yes. I know what I'm making
right now.
I know, but it was everything. So it's like crazy because it's officially 1 month since you got married today.
Oh no!
So happy 1 month anniversary, babe. I know you're probably listening. So so that was definitely my high and why I missed out last podcast, which I'm kind of sad about because I had some choice words for Verity.
Adore, we use them all.
Maybe what I'm sensing is we should do like a book recap of 2023. Mm-hmm. Talk about like our favorite reads, mm-hmm, and our least favorite reads.
I would be so down.
That sounds cool.
Like I said, I had paragraphs about Verity. So that was definitely my high. Lows, we're just kind of going through some regression phases with Vivian. Mm-hmm. She's just not really sleeping like she should be, and mm-hmm, she's waking up a lot in the middle of the night still, but it's not so much like cute waking up in the middle of the night phase. Mm-hmm. We're like bloody screaming murder, you know, phase right now. So we're working with that. Yeah. Trying to see what we can do to hopefully get that settled, because this mama needs some sleep.
And Verity is not the book to read when you need sleep.
Yeah, no, it's not. Definitely. Mm-mm. Nope. But other than that though, I feel like that's my only really low, which is good. I'm good.
Amen.
How are you doing?
Overall, for the most part, I'm doing pretty well. I would say my high, we had a really nice Thanksgiving. It was my first year hosting with my family, and that was a lot of fun. I told my mom, I said, hey, I'm happy to host the family. Don't know how I feel about pulling off a turkey. My mom said, let me handle cooking the turkey. That's fine. You and your sister figure out how you want to divvy up all the side dishes and everything like that. So my husband, my sister and I, we all kind of took care of that. And it ended up being about 12 of us over here for Thanksgiving, which was a lot of fun. It worked out super well. And I think my high would just be being able to slow down this last week was needed, and I'm really grateful for that.
Mm-hmm.
My low, there's been a lot professionally going on. I was passed over for the third time in a row for a position that I really, really wanted. Mm-hmm. Without going into too many details about it, I do love my job and nothing against it. It is an awesome company to work for that I work for. But it it led to some deep reflection, just a lot of feelings that I had to deal with this week. So that would be my low. And guys, we're 5 weeks away from 2024, though. That's pretty good.
That means we're 4 weeks away from Christmas. I don't want to hear that.
What's your point?
Black Friday shopping, trying to get all those gifts on the list. I had to throw some bows for some from some elderly ladies. I'm like, no.
Oh my gosh, it's rough in those streets, isn't it?
It's rough in these suburban streets.
Anyway, should we get on to what we're drinking and to our book?
Yeah.
Awesome. Okay, so we read Black Cake by Charmaine Wilkerson. I'm super excited to dive into conversation with you ladies about this one. Since it partially takes place in the Caribbean, we had to have rum. Mm-hmm. I mean, come on. So our cocktail consultant, my wonderful husband, educated us to go with the traditional daiquiri. So all of us have daiquiris. If you are interested in the recipe specifically that we used, Marco and I are huge fans of the Educated Barfly. He watches a lot of Educated Barfly's videos and he details how to make it and everything like that. So we are enjoying it and may or may not have already made it halfway through.
I like the video you sent. I like how he like explains like the history and things like that and has like the conversation. I'm not gonna lie, I didn't listen to all the history. I was like, I want you to drink, but like it was interesting. Right.
No, and Marco kind of skips through some of that sometimes too. So I'm glad to know that you like it. We can definitely keep that in mind when we share recipes and different ideas going forward too. Let's dive into Black Cake. I'm super duper excited. Abigail, do you want to kick us off with the summary? Actually, you want to go ahead and read for us?
Sure. Okay. So family ties are often very fraught and complicated thing. Just ask any member of the Bennett family. Blood is thicker than water, so they say. Black Cake by Charmaine Wilkerson is a testimony to the grief, love, pain, and joy often associated with relationships. Told between then and now timelines, we follow Eleanor Bennett, or Kavitina Brown, as she was known in her youth, as she journeys from the Caribbean islands to the UK, then to America. A runaway bride and a true survivor in every way, Covey was a lover of the sea as a child. A strong and healthy swimmer, she fell in love with Gibbs Grant as a teenager. While fate would threaten to tear them apart and then help bring them back together, Byron and Benedette Bennett, Eleanor's children, are forced to reckon with their mother's very troubled, sordid past and secrets after her death. Learning about their mother's hardships and the existence of their long-lost sister, given up for adoption, Marple, reunited and connected through their love of food, and a beloved recipe for Caribbean rum and rum-soaked black cake. All of Eleanor Bennett's children will rediscover, or in Marble's case, discover for the first time the identity of their mother and one another.
Oh my goodness. Yes. So what did we think of this book?
I absolutely loved this book. It was telling, it was emotional. I'm not one who likes multi-viewed, because they always throw me off on, you know, sometimes. But this one was just done so well. I do have to say, though, in the beginning of the book, I was kind of thrown off because we went straight into like Covey and Lynn, and we're like, wait, who are these people? But then, of course, as the book went on, we kind of got a sense of who they were. So that was wonderful. But yeah, overall, great book. I absolutely loved it.
What about you?
I enjoyed it as well. I love the themes, you know, especially the themes of family and passion, where I heard like those being like some themes interwoven. And Yeah, I generally enjoy the book. I share in Alicia's sentiment of I don't like the then now, like multiple perspective things. Like I'm not usually a fan because I, you know, if not executed effectively, it can be confusing. Yeah. And I'm not gonna lie, in the very beginning I was kind of confused. And it wasn't until things started to really fit into place for me that I was like, okay, this makes sense. I'm able to follow along with the storyline a little bit better. Mm-hmm. But I love the characters. I love getting to know them and getting to know the main character, Cubby, through her just being able to tell her story. And, you know, I just like that was another theme I noticed throughout the book of people being able to tell their side of their stories and how healing it was.
Do you think the book was intentionally written that way?
I think so. Like, if I'm reflecting on it, I think so. Because I think in the beginning, we were meant to be like, who is this person? And why are we learning so much about them? And like, who are all these characters? Until the end of part one, where everything fell into place.
What do you think? Would you say the same?
Yeah, I would say the same thing. I mean, like she said, it was definitely one of those things where you're kind of just thrown into the characters. But by the time part one was done, we had a sense of who everybody was and kind of where like the story was going. What did you think about the book?
Yeah, I like the insight both of you offer. So I loved this book. I read it shortly after it came out. I need to look back to when it was released, but I read it shortly after it came out. And this time around for the podcast, I ended up listening to it on Audible. And also, for those of you interested, it has been made into a TV series on Hulu. And I know Alicia hasn't had a chance to. Have you watched the Hulu series at all, Abby, or no?
I tried to start it last night and just kept getting distracted. But I did like look into like the characters and things like that and saw good
movie. Highly recommend it. I think the book to film adaptation is actually really good. And it certainly helped remind me like how much I loved this story, how much I enjoyed it. The descriptions of the sea, the water, swimming, and especially all of the food. I just loved how all of the characters were intertwined and connected, whether it was by the love of the sea or the water and swimming, or it was a demonstration of how food can unify us, how food can unite us. That was really attractive to me. And I did find these characters compelling. So I loved it. I loved it all. Yeah. Okay. So Alicia just showed me. It was published back in 2022. Mm-hmm. And I remember I bought this book because my husband and I were still dating long distance at the time. I bought this book in an airport. Mm-hmm. I do remember that now. And it was a quick, I made it through, I think, the plane ride there and the plane ride back. I was able to read it. Like, that's how tied into the story that I was.
Yeah.
So, I mean, let's just kind of dive in maybe character by character. So we'll talk about Covey or Eleanor first. What did both of you think of our beloved Covey and Eleanor?
So Covey's, oh my gosh, her story, it just broke my heart. I don't know. Just how she became Eleanor, that like shattered me even more, you know, just because she's unfortunately involved in this family dynamic where mom is long gone, which of course we'll talk about what actually happened to her mother, which was really sad as well. And her dad, I was not a fan. Her dad was an awful human. Like, I get it. I know that everyone has their addictions and they have things that, you know, they're going through. And I couldn't imagine, like, one day, like, your significant other just ups and leaves you to raise a child. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't excuse for the fact on how he treated her. Yeah.
Well, so to give a little bit of background in that, right? So Coventina, Covey's mm-hmm. parents, Lynn and Matilda, mm-hmm. were essentially, I mean, Lynn is Chinese. He was Chinese. Mm-hmm. And Matilda was full African-American, full Korean.
Yeah, so she was born in the Caribbean, full African-American, just really quickly. And so during that time in, like, the 1960s and even a little bit before, like, there was a huge influx of Chinese immigrants to the Caribbean, and also Indian immigrants to parts of the Caribbean as well. So mm-hmm. that's why you'll see, you know, a lot of African-American folks with maybe traditionally, like, Asian or Oriental features because of that mm-hmm. influx.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And so Lynn's family migrated over to the Caribbean, ended up building from the ground up this empire, right? This dried goods store. And from a very young age, the author talks about how Lynn was really good with numbers and learned how to sort of manipulate the system, if you will, to work mm-hmm. in his favor, which ultimately turns into a gambling addiction. Mm-hmm. And all of this he's battling in the midst of meeting Matilda, Covey's mom, Matilda becoming pregnant with Covey. And in the TV show, both of you can remind me if you will, but in the, Lynn and Matilda are never actually married.
No.
No.
Right. Mm-hmm. So then Matilda ends up leaving Lynn and leaving Covey with Lynn. So we can kind of talk about how that certainly creates some trauma for Covey as well, right? But Lynn's gambling addiction, obviously, any addiction is a really tricky thing, and it is all-consuming for many, many people, ruining lives, ruining relationships. And we see Lynn's relationship with Covey is a really good demonstration of that, because as a result of his issues and needing to settle his debts, he gives his daughter over to a smarmy weasel of a man. I don't even know if he can be called a man, in marriage. And how did we feel about that?
I'm glad he's dead.
Yeah, I was like, I don't know who did it, but I'm happy they did it.
Exactly. Yeah, I know. Same, because it's like, this part, I think, just what frustrates me. And like, in a sense, I get it, because you're struggling, right? So it's like, how do I get out of my debts? How can I get out of whatever situation I'm in, right? So you try to find an outlet to help yourself. But it's also so selfish, because you don't care who it hurts in the process, right? So in this case, he's like, here's my daughter wrapped in a pretty bow. Like, here you go, in exchange for his protection. And I was, oh my gosh, it made me so angry. I think I feel like I say this a lot with books that frustrate me. I threw the book. So that's going to just be my theme. I feel like I need to make some merch, guys. Like, yeah. I threw my book.
Right? Oh my gosh. Totally invest in that. I would buy that hardcore. But doesn't the author reference, when she talks about little man Henry, mm-hmm. she talks about how there were many people that wanted to kill him?
Yeah.
He was, it's not like he was this beloved guy.
Yeah. He was like this misunderstood soul. No, the man was horrible.
Yeah.
And I would have poisoned him way before the wedding.
Right.
Listen, Pearl made me think of you.
Mm-hmm.
I 100% thought of you. I did. I really, really did, though. So, listener, when Covey's mother, Matilda, leaves, Pearl, who was Matilda's best friend, ultimately becomes housekeeper, caretaker. Like, she really looks after Covey. This seemed to me to be a very cultural kind mm-hmm. of thing that would just sort of naturally happen. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's the case, but.
Yeah, I think in Caribbean cultures, like my family's from Haiti, so I speak from our perspective of that you don't just have one mother in your life. You have, like, you're raised by many women. And that was like one of the themes in there where Cubby was raised by many women, like women who would come to the kitchen after her mom left. And, you know, Pearl really filled that gap in her heart. You know, she filled the spot of mother, sister, caretaker, friend. And so that what must have been like, because for Cubby, like in the beginning, we, you know, when her after her mom first left, you saw the sadness and everything and wondering if her mom would come back, and then like flashbacks alluded to her depressive space, but she gravitated towards Pearl for comfort, and Pearl was, you know, ready to step up. Like, you know, that Pearl was originally hired by Matilda, Cubby's mother, Lynn's wife, to be like help around with chores and everything. And so after Matilda left, she stayed for Cubby, because at first you think, well, why did she stay? Like, you know, the lady of the house is gone. The guy, like, I don't think the guy can pay her. He's in so much debt. But then you learn later on, you know, her reason was to protect Cubby. And that was really awesome to get to see their relationship blossom and how well Pearl knew Cubby.
And tell me that you would not have poisoned the cake too.
I wouldn't have even hesitated. Like, she hesitated, I wouldn't have. Like, the first try, I would have been like, in my eyes, be like, don't you eat it.
Like, I'm sending you telepathic signals right now. Don't eat the cake. Okay, so listener, if you haven't read the book, for context, right? So Cubby is given over to marriage to little man Henry by Lynn, her father, and Pearl offers to make the traditional black cake mm-hmm. for the wedding, and Pearl ultimately poisons the cake.
We don't know.
I guess that's true. I believe it was Pearl. Does anybody else really believe that it was anybody else? Honestly.
I think it was Bunny. I think it was Bunny.
I think so too.
Mm-hmm. You thought it was Bunny?
I thought it was Bunny.
Wait, there was some suspicion it was possibly Lynn too, though, no?
No, he was too clueless. This man don't know what's going on. Yeah.
This man had...
Abigail and Alicia say don't give him that credit. No.
He was only watching out for himself and no one else. He didn't give two donkey's butts about his daughter. But no, I think it was... I think it was Bunny, because she... I don't know. I think, in my opinion, though, I feel like Bunny loved Cubby, but not in, like, you know, more than, like, best friend sense. I'm feeling more like, you know, she would have gone through the ends of the earth for this girl. And she did not like the situation that was going on. Mm-hmm. And I feel like if anyone needed to get their friend out of a situation, this is how you do it.
Yeah.
Let me just poison this man right quick.
Mm-hmm. Let him drop dead at the reception.
Yep.
That's a friend. Yeah. That was her first escape, you know, into her new life and towards the path of becoming Eleanor.
Yeah.
Like, she, you know, she didn't know what was going on. I believe she didn't know what was going on, but she saw this man drop dead and she's like, I'm out. There's the door. I'm out. And she ran. And she ran to what she knew. She ran to the sea.
Amen. So do we get into Bunny then for a second? Let's get into Bunny. How did we feel about her? What did we think? So, listener, Bunny is Covey's best friend, her childhood friend. They both loved the sea together. They were swimmers, dreamers. Mm-hmm. What did we think of Bunny?
Yeah, I loved Bunny. I think that Bunny, when you first meet her, you just envision her as like this, like, oh, like, Cubby's so cool, so I'm just gonna follow her around. Like this baby duck almost. It's like, whatever Cubby does, I'm gonna do. But then you start to see her really grow and you start to learn so much about her and so much about her passion for swimming. And I think that, like, seeing her growth, seeing her story, and what she becomes when she's older, that it was so different than, you know, than what I thought initially when I saw her. I thought, like, for me, I was like, oh, she's just this, like, clumsy girl that doesn't know what she wants to do, but is just following around Cubby. But yeah, I ended up falling, like, you know, really being endeared to this character.
Yeah, so listener, we find out Benny goes on to become this world-renowned, really famous swimmer by the name of Etta Pringle. Alicia and I were trying to remember, Abigail, was Etta Bunny's given name?
It's Benedette. It's Benedette. Yeah.
Right. That's right. Okay. But she changed that to be her last name. That's what it was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it was Benedette. And then they called, I guess, like, her nickname was Etta. And then her nickname was, like, her nickname was Bunny. Like, people who were very close to her were called her Bunny.
And then that's ultimately, too, where Benny, Eleanor's daughter, gets her name from. So do we get into Benny now and Byron, BNB, the children?
Oh, gosh.
Let me take over this one really quick. Byron frustrated the heck out of me. I was so frustrated for the fact that he was just so selfish, I feel like. Benny was going through so much, and here Byron was trying to, like, be the perfect son and trying to, like, please his parents. And I feel like he didn't really give Benny a chance to, like, really explain what was going on with her. And so I feel like he was just,
I could see a little bit of that.
Yeah.
I think that there is, I hate saying that there's, like, some justification to his selfishness, only because he's a Black man fighting to prove himself in the world of science. Like, I thought you might want to weigh in on that a little bit, Mr. Charles. So, Benny and Byron, no wonder they clash, because they're just so different. I don't know necessarily that their issues as siblings were drawn from a character trait of selfishness so much as a need for survival.
What do you think? I can see that. My opinion for Byron, I do echo Alicia's, like, thoughts on his selfishness. Like, he has a very self-centered perspective, for sure. But I think, to your point, Jordan, he had to be, you know, focused on, like, his passion, his future, his drive. Because not only was that instilled in him by his father and wanting to make his family proud, but he had to, like, not only prove things and want his parents' approval, but he wanted society's approval too. So I can see where both of those things can play in, where a Black man and, you know, in the science field, and it's not predominantly like diverse in that field. And, you know, he's also a surfer and all these things. So he breaks a lot of stereotypes. So he has to be in spaces where he has to prove himself. Even when I think about him, there was a position as him for a manager that he kept being overlooked
director.
And he kept being looked over for, and they give, like, the corporate response. It's like, you're too valuable of an asset where you are, so we can't promote you and things like that. And so here is his resume, which is several pages long, but he's still, like, kind of constantly doing this battle. Even if we think about socially, you know, he drives a very nice car, and he always is prepared to explain to officers, like, expecting that they're going to pull him over because he's, like, this Black man sitting in his car, and he has to brace himself for negative, because he's worried about, like, what if this is the last time I'm alive, or, you know, like, what if something goes south and things like that. So he has a lot on his shoulders and a lot of pressure on his shoulders. And I think that his sister, Benny, is a flake. I really do. I think that she has a lot of dreams, but I also think that she's directionless. Mm-hmm. And I think we want to romanticize, like, that she has this vision for her life, you know, for her, like, owning, like, this cafe and all these things and all this stuff. And there's nothing wrong with having vision for your life. I just have an issue with the fact that she's also oblivious to other people's emotions and feelings. And she, you know, she tends to shut people out very quickly that are only wanting the best for her. But she hasn't, it doesn't, like, you know, she's had her own things to navigate with abuse and being rejected for loans and, you know, kind of meeting, like, these dead end jobs. Like, she has her own things, not to say that they're unimportant. But I also think, like, they just, overall, what I'm saying is they don't understand one another. Mm-hmm. Like, they don't take the time to really see each other in their adult space.
Well, and I think what happened, the one Thanksgiving with the family in particular, mm-hmm. is excuse me, is what catapulted mm-hmm. all of that, if you ask me personally, because you get the impression, you get the feeling they are in each other's corner. As brother and sister, they want to be able to be there for one another. They want to be able to support each other. And Eleanor and her husband, Bert, who, by the way, spoiler, if you haven't read the book, listener, is Gibbs. So Gibbs also ends up making his way to London and then also ends up making his way to America with Covey or Eleanor, and as a result of everything that happened with little man's death and her running away from the wedding and blah blah blah, he changes his name mm-hmm. and becomes Bert Bennett. So I think as parents, Bert and Eleanor did a really good job emphasizing the individual strengths and talents that each of their children had mm-hmm. and maybe focused a little less than they should have on how they could support each other, if that makes sense. And there's even a part where the author addresses the issue of depression. And we learn that as our leading character, Covey, Eleanor, she battles with that a little bit, especially after everything that she goes through when she is able to escape the islands, makes her way to the UK, ends up in Scotland with mm-hmm. her new identity as Eleanor, and is assaulted, is attacked, and ends up having a child that she did not anticipate, right? That was not what her 18-year-old, 19-year-old self would have envisioned. And this was before she was able to reconnect with Gibbs and they became, you know, Bert and Eleanor Bennett together as a team. All of that to say, those kinds of secrets, right? Like that kind of a story, not only does it stay with you, it does weigh you down. It impacts the way that you see the world. Mm-hmm. And I would imagine that it would influence the way that you raise children. Mm-hmm. So looking at Byron and Benny or Benedetta, can we say that they did the best that they could? Honestly, that's just my... You know what I mean? That's my question.
No, I definitely understand. I get where you're coming from, you know, being a mom myself, because I had my son when I was 21. I was way too young to have a child, in my opinion, because, you know, as Jordan knows, I'm not sure if I mentioned it to you, Abby, but I was raped when I was in high school, went through a very traumatizing time, and ended up in a relationship with someone who I thought was my entire world, and ended up having a child with this person who was abusive. And it was not a story, you know, fairy tale that, you know, I think one person would think of. Like, when you have a child with someone, of course you want to try to stick it out for the sake of having parents, right? But you know, but it's just one of those things where it scares you, because you, and it did, ultimately it did create the space for me where I'm like, I don't want to have children anymore. Like, I was already terrified enough to raise my son, and I couldn't imagine raising another little human in the world. Well, fast forward, you know, meeting my incredible husband now, and, you know, we of course have Vivi. And it scares me. It scares me to death, because what I went through, God forbid, happens to her, right? So I feel like we have to, as a parent, navigate in the world so that way you avoid these things to happen, right? And you have to set certain boundaries for your kids and rules and stuff. And yeah, like, it may be strict, or it may seem, you know, a little too much, but as someone who has gone through everything, you know, that I would not want to have anyone else to go through, you have to set those for your kids. And yeah, so that's kind of like my two cents about it.
Thank you for your, for sharing that, for your vulnerability.
What do you think, Abby?
Yeah. Again, like, Alicia, thank you for sharing that, for your vulnerability. I really appreciate that. And I agree, you know, as I'm thinking about, like, my own parents, which one of the themes that came up for me was, like, humanizing your parents. Yeah. And sometimes I forget to do that. I'm like, oh, my mom had, like, this whole other life before me. And what I notice is that, like, what I've noticed about her in the past is that, yeah, her, one of her goals has been to protect me from the hurt that she's been, you know, she's experienced in her life. And when I was younger, I didn't understand it. And I was like, sometimes I'd rebel against it and be upset. But it took, you know, it took time for me to really understand, like, oh, okay, everything they did, like, my mom, my father included, was to, like, protect me and help, and with the hopes that I get to be, I get to live in a way where, like, in a way and with freedoms that they didn't get to, you know, they didn't have, and navigate the world in a way that they didn't get to navigate the world in. And, like, being able to share that appreciation. And so that's why I think I have that appreciation for Eleanor Covey, because she worked really hard to protect her children from the truth, not because that she wanted to be deceitful towards her children. It's because she was wanting to protect them in the hopes that they would live a better life, and have all the opportunities that she just didn't have.
I would say Gibbs wanted the same. Oh, yeah. I would say that he wanted the same, too. Yeah. I agree. So let's talk about Marble for a second then. What did we think about Marble?
Oh, Marble. I don't know. I loved her. You know, of course, I know she didn't really know, or maybe she just didn't understand that she was adopted. I think just kind of looking back now, I think she just, she had like an inkling for sure, like, you know, I don't look like my parents, but maybe like my grandparents looked a certain way. But she never really felt like she had fit in, and she never really understood why. So I am definitely, you know, glad that by the end of this book, though, that they all were able to get together and, you know, they're starting that bond. I wish that, you know, with this book, I do feel like there are some bits and pieces that could have been pulled, so that way we had a bit more of an opportunity to see how the three of them end up, you know, after reconnecting. In my opinion, I think that would have been a great chapter to add in, even if it was like a couple years later, or, you know, a few years later, and this is where they were at. I feel like that would have definitely did Covey justice on like how her kids are doing after she passes. You know, so that's just kind of my two cents on her, but I absolutely love her.
Yeah. What about you? What did you think, Abby?
I don't really know what to make of Marble. I think she was all right, I guess. Like, she looked just like a Covey, apparently, and had very similar features to Covey. And I think that her life was pretty cool, that she got to write this, you know, amazing books about her passion, which was like cooking and food and history and, like, you know, and art, and combining all those things. And I guess I'm just like trying to also a lot, like, you know, the reason I'm like, oh, he's all right, because I don't know how I feel about like her putting her son in boarding school. Like, okay. You know, they explain why she's like, oh, I'm, you know, he had an Italian education. She wanted him to have a UK education. Mind you, I don't know if boarding schools are common in the UK, and that's just where
I think they are.
Okay, so then that makes sense if that's the case. So if boarding schools are common in the UK, then it makes a little bit more sense. But I really didn't know what to make of her. To be honest, my opinion differs in that I don't know what she added to the story.
Like, really?
Yeah, I don't. I think if she wasn't like present, the story would have still ended in a similar way.
You wouldn't have been left wondering who Covey's first child was, or who Betty and Byron's sister was.
I would have been curious, like, and if maybe one chapter or one point of view would have been dedicated to her, that would have been okay. But I don't know about her, like, her, you know, her purpose in, like, being part of the narrative. And that's just my perspective. Like, when I was reading it, I was like, okay, like, it was good to, like, know that she had a good life, and, you know, she's very passionate, and she shares a lot of character traits with her mom, and she looks just like her mom, and things like that. But I think
go ahead.
Like, I was going to say, like, I think it would have just been nice if she had spoken to Eleanor when she was alive. And I think that would have added more to the story than like her finding out everything after Eleanor's death.
Well, but what about her getting to share Black Cake, her getting to kind of have that full rounded like picture or perspective of where she came from by partaking in that with Benny and Byron?
Yeah, I think that was very beautiful. I really do. But again, I think that if she had spoken to Eleanor prior, I would have resonated with that more. But to me, I was just like, oh, okay, that was nice. But yeah. I didn't really feel like a overall connection to her character as I did with all the other characters. Like, all, even the minor characters, I felt more of a connection with them.
Who's a minor character you felt more connected to? Like Pearl, for example?
Pearl, Bunny, Lynn, Mr. Mitch. Like,
let's talk about Mr. Mitch. What did we think about Mr. Mitch?
You go first, Jordan. What did you think?
I just appreciated, like, the way that Charmaine Wilkerson, the way that the author like gave him this arc of a minor character, a side character that whose sole focus, sole purpose was bringing everybody together. Mm-hmm. Like, and it just was really beautiful, in my opinion, the friendship and the relationship towards the end that he got to have with Eleanor. And the way that he fought for her wishes, the way that he made it very clear to Byron and Benny, the way that he insisted, you know, I understand you have your feelings about these things. This is what your mother asked for. This is what your mother requested.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree. I, like you said, I absolutely love how he ended up coming together in this small little role to get the family back, because that's definitely what Cubby would have wanted. And I feel like that's probably what Gibbs would have wanted too. Because I mean, it's mentioned too that he's gone to New York and he, you know, went to go check in a sense like how Benny was doing after like their fight and everything too. So I definitely appreciated his role and just their friendship that they ended up building, and that she was able to trust in him all of this information and come together, you know, with everything that she had gone through for her children.
Yeah. He was a character that commanded the room.
Yeah.
That very gently required respect. I remember one part in the book, and I don't know if you two will be able to speak to it because you read it more recently than I did, but he was not putting up with Benny or Byron's antics at all. He was ready and prepared with every answer, with every response to say, but this is what Eleanor wanted. Mm-hmm. This was the request of your mother, so we're going to go ahead and move forward one way or another in the way that she requested.
Yeah, it's pretty much like, sit down, shut up, you're gonna listen to this whether you like it or not.
Yeah. Absolutely. No, I think that speaks to the love that he had for Eleanor. Like, you know, I think about like any other lawyer would have been like, okay, whatever, like this is too much, like, you know, like these kids are all over the place, you know, and I, you know, like I got other things to do, you know, but I think it spoke to how much he like loved and respected her for him to do that, to be so firm about her last wishes.
I would agree. Would agree. Man, this book, it was just so good. Was there anything else that we missed? I feel like that we might need to cover. I'm like, looking back through my notes,
we did find out towards the end when they ended up meeting who Bunny, like Bunny and who she was, we did end up finding out that it was Bunny that spiked little man.
Oh, did you look at that?
Yeah, it was her. Because she, when she was in the kitchen with Pearl while Pearl was making everything, they said that Bunny had took the vial of the poison and put it in his drink. His drink. So I was like, that is the friendship right there.
Oh my goodness. I must have missed that. I don't know how I missed that. Yeah, but yeah, I thought it was her the whole time. I was like, it was like
towards the end somewhere. I'll have to find it. It was like discovered that Bunny was actually the one that like had took the poison.
Bunny, good for you. And then also I want to talk about Lynn. He did not deserve to be happy and rich and move on with his life.
Like, what kind of nonsensical thing?
I'm like, you couldn't do that before? You couldn't go and be in Miami and be rich, and that could have been your other solution before? I'm like, you don't deserve happiness. Anyways, and we find out that Lynn was like hired a private detective and had tabs kept on Cubby this whole time, so he knew she was alive. And I'm like,
okay, I found this section. Do we want me to read it for a moment?
Yes.
What page?
Page 379.
Okay, I want to read with you. I gotta see it for myself.
So, it's the section titled Back Then. Back then, there were no video surveillance cameras. The wedding photographer was off in a corner changing his film. The music men were busy making music. The waiters were still delivering plates of cake to some of the tables. The father of the bride was finishing yet another drink. The bride was stabbing at her cake with a fork, trying not to cry. Everyone was busy looking somewhere else as one of the guests pulled a small bottle out of her purse. Back then, everyone knew that the champagne could go to a young lady's head, that she might wander from one table to another with a glass in her hand, that she might lean in between the newly married couple and deposit a kiss on her friend's cheek, that she might rest her glass on the table, that she might knock a plate of cake onto the bride's lap, then accidentally pick up the bridegroom's flute instead of her own. No one would think anything of this because, out of the water, Bunny Pringle had always been a clumsy girl. No one would even realize at first that it had been a glass of champagne to bring an end to little man's life. When a police officer finally sniffed at the broken flute and uttered the word poison, some of the wedding guests would think of their own secret wishes, their own deep resentments towards the dead man, toward the kind of man who drew satisfaction from the coercion of others. They would hope that the person who had done this would never be caught. So many people had been in and out of the kitchen that day. It could have been any number of them. Back then, it was easier to commit murder. You only had to concentrate, know where your loyalties lie, and not think of the consequences. There you go. That answered your question. Yes.
I was like,
my girl Bunny.
I mean, if that doesn't give you an excerpt of the just phenomenal writing mm-hmm. of this book, listener, I would so recommend it. And I yeah. know that both of you haven't watched the show yet, but please, please, please do. It's only 8 episodes. I have to put a plug in for it because I think it's so phenomenally cast and it's done so, so well.
It's on Hulu, right?
Correct.
I need one of your Hulu accounts because I don't got Hulu. There's no point in me getting it if I'm only going to watch the show.
You did just sign my husband into your YouTube TV account so that he could watch the Chiefs game right now. I did. So I guess I owe you.
Yeah, you do. But, you know, it's for a good cause. It's for a good cause.
You scratch my back, I'll scratch yours.
Yeah, exactly.
We know where our real loyalties lie. I'm just kidding. Oh my goodness. That's too funny. Oh, well, do either of you want to add anything more about the book? How do we feel?
I liked it. I think overall I liked it. There were some parts that were like, I felt like mixed feelings about, but I would give it like a solid, like maybe like 4 out of 5.
I like it. I would say 4.5. Would you read more of Charmaine Wilkerson?
Oh, I didn't even know she had more books. Yeah, I would read more of her. I like her writing style.
Yeah, no, I agree. I give this not a 4.3. It was definitely good. You know, like you said, I feel like there are some parts that could have been a little skipped over. It was a little draggy in some areas. But other than that, I really enjoyed it. And I can't wait to watch the show. I'm pretty excited.
I'm so excited for you. You'll both have to let me know what you think. With all of that being said, too, listener, so we know that we normally do the like film, TV, movie segment, whatnot. That does not feel right for this since there already has been a film adaptation. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to tell you right now, I'm partial to the way that this TV series was cast. And I'm curious to know your thoughts as well. I'm looking at both of you as well as thinking about our listeners. So feel free to weigh in on that. I am so excited to dive into our next book because it's Christmas, best time of the year. Oh, Abigail's not excited, but she's gonna be excited. We're reading The Christmas Sisters by Sarah Morgan. I'm really looking forward to it.
Oh, I am too. I am so excited. Listen, I did not waste any time. I have Christmas decorations up, but then again, I do have like a 1-year-old and my son and stuff, so they definitely needed Christmas a little early.
Do you need us to come decorate for you,
yeah,
Abigail?
Yeah, we can come decorate.
Oh, there's nothing here. Christmas
thing. We'll bring things. Don't you
bring the cheer.
That's okay. We don't have that here.
I will hire some Christmas carolers to like to show up at your door and start singing carols.
If you could see her right now, listener, Abigail is like, absolutely not. Please, for the love of Jesus, do not.
I have these sweatpants that have the Grinch on there. And I'm like, that's me.
She does. She literally, oh my gosh, it's the worst. Well, I'm excited to dive into some holiday reading. I know Alicia is. I know you are, listeners out there. So Abigail's going to love every minute of it, and she's going to do it with a happy heart.
We might need to find a drink that's a little bit stronger for you, Abby, to get you through this podcast.
That's okay. The Haitian eggnog has really strong rum in it. So I'll bring some of that.
Wait, Haitian eggnog? It's made with rum?
Mm-hmm.
Oh my gosh. That does not, you're gonna have to share. What if we did that? Do you want to share the recipe?
Sure. Yeah, it's very easy. It's like four ingredients. Yeah.
She's like, I lied. It's six.
She's like, maybe
it's 12, actually. It's 17. It's very easy to make.
Oh my goodness. Okay. Well, yes. Again, listener, it's The Christmas Sisters by Sarah Morgan. That's the one that we have up next. You may or may not be getting a couple special Christmas episodes from us, one of which announcing the winner for the giveaway. Mm-hmm. Be on the lookout on our Instagram account for that, because we're going to be posting about that. And then Alicia and I have another holiday book that we would really love to read. Abigail, of course, you're welcome to join us, but not obligated to. So, listeners, you may or may not get a bonus episode come December. We shall see how that goes.
Stay tuned.
Yes, that's right. And until then, listeners, we love you. We're super grateful for you. This is obviously a just season of Thanksgiving reflection. I love both of you. I am super grateful that you have put up with me and you have just dived into this passion project with me wholeheartedly. I'm super grateful for both of you with that. So, and it's a way that we can all connect every month and continue to stay connected. So I love it.
And it gives us a reason to drink. So there you go. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. There you have it. The real reason why. But until then, listeners, stay reading.
Stay classy.
Stay classy.
And
stay drinking.
All right. I love you guys.
Love you.
Bye.